Your Humanities Half Hour is brought to you by the Northern Marianas Humanities Council, Navigating the Human Experience Together.
Hafaday, Zantaro, welcome to Your Humanities Half Hour. I'm Catherine Perry, and our guest today is the author of the book Finotsomoru for Beginners, Dr. Fay Antalan. Dr. Fay, welcome to the show, and welcome back to Saipan.
Thank you. Thank you.
Tell us, what is this book about, and why is it so important for our community?
Well, this book will represent the first textbook for Tomoru teaching and learning at the post-secondary level, but it's also useful, as we found, throughout the lifespan. I've tested it with college students, with middle school students, and community people in Hawaii, you know, where we teach it, to see if it would work. So it's for everyone who needs or wants to learn to speak Tomoru.
How is it that you conceived this book and had the desire to create it?
When I came to the University of Hawaii, I was there for professorship at the School of Public Health, Graduate School of Public Health. Tomoru students who were at the University of Hawaii heard that I was there or knew from their parents or what. So they started coming to my office, and we used to meet once a week in the evening, just to chat some more. And the undergraduate students, I guess, heard about it, and they came to me asking, said, Dr. Antalan, you know, we have to take a foreign language, but we don't even know our own language. If it's possible, we would like to use that requirement to learn our own language. And that kind of touched me, so I went to the department then of Indo-Pacific Language and Literature, that's in charge of, you know, Pacific languages and so on. And they said they didn't have, it's not in the curriculum, they don't have a teacher to teach it. And so, you know, that's why it's not taught. And there was no so-called demand. And they asked if I could teach it. And I told them that my only credential is that I'm a native speaker. I do know how to teach, and I can put curriculum together. So they asked if I would create the curriculum, because it has to pass the curriculum committee to be established and offered at the University of Hawaii. So we did. They gave me 2 years, and in those 2 years, I created the. It was very hard, because this is aside from a regular full-time teaching position. But the students were wonderful. You know, the students that I had taking Tomoru were just wonderful. I must say that at the beginning I would have like 27 to 30 students a semester. That's a large class for language, you know, for a language class. But the students all wanted, well, either to get credit. Some of them actually knew Tomoru pretty well, especially from the CNMI. But they wanted the credit for their knowledge, which was fine. And so that's how we began that. In 2 years, we established, it was approved by the curriculum committee. And since then, since 1995, it had been an offering at the University of Hawaii.
Well, congratulations on planting mm-hmm. the seed of that, yeah. And especially taking on the responsibility on top of everything mm-hmm. else you were doing. Why did you feel it was important? What were you feeling from the kids that came to you?
Well, the kids, when they come to me, you know, many of them would complain. I mean, the ones that did not know how to speak Tomoru at all would say, you know, they blame their parents and so on, you know. And yes, it was our fault. It was our fault that we did not maintain our language and do that. We did not know. I told them, I said, your parents thought they were doing the right thing to prepare you for the English world. And so that Samoa was becoming less important and English was more important to, you know, to survive. The other thing that I felt the students wanted is they needed that language for their identity. You know, they were in the midst of the students that were similar to them, Filipino students, Hawaiian students, Samoan students, and others. So the only difference between them or among them is their language, because many of them, they resemble each other. But, you know, I think the students really felt that knowing their language was important to them. Mm-hmm. It's not only the language, but within the language carries the culture with it. It's not just, I would say that language is the expression of a culture. And without that, you know, the students feel kind of like in a void in terms of their development, educationally and so on. To be honest, sometimes students would come to me and they would try to, credit out of the course. You know, they'll just take a test,
okay,
test out and get the credit.
Okay.
But I said, you know, why is that not important? He said, they would tell me that their parents didn't think that it's important. It's not going to help them get a job or this and that. But other students, it's not to get a job. They want to know who they are. Mm-hmm. And they want to know how are they related to, you know, other Pacific Islanders in terms of language alone. Mm-hmm.
So in those days, when you developed this curriculum, there was no internet.
No.
How did you go about gathering the resources, and what resources did you use?
I would call the University of Guam, the faculties there that teach Samoro. Even because they had a bilingual education act in the late 60s, 70s, where they were developing textbooks.
Okay.
I think even here in the CNMI, they developed some wonderful books. Some of them probably never got used, but, you know, they were... it gave us the opportunity to at least create something. So I used those, plus the people that are teaching, to find out how are they doing it. Because I did not find Topping's book easy to use as a teaching tool for tomorrow.
Now, Topping's book, can you describe... He studied the Chamorro language way back.
Yeah, he came in
back.
The 60s to Guam 60s, to do okay. his dissertation on Chamorro language. He's a linguist.
Okay.
The structure, the grammar, and so on of the Chamorro language. Mm-hmm. And he did a wonderful thing putting together what's called spoken Chamorro. He did a dictionary and I think Chamorro grammar. He tried to compile that together. But that's not sufficient to teach. You mm-hmm. know, that's... You need a textbook yeah. that helps the student to, and you need that because one of the things I found why you need a textbook is as I was teaching, which I speak tomorrow, but students would ask me why, you know, there's in tomorrow verbs and pronouns, we have pronouns. And for example, I go, you would say, humano zu, and zu is the I.
Right.
The verb follows them, you know, the... And so a student said, why do I have to say that? Why can't I say who, you know, which is another way of saying I. Huhano.
Yeah. I go. It's like you said, I go, I.
Yes.
Humanozu.
Yeah. But, you know, but it's tomorrow, the language is not like that. You cannot follow the English language structure. Mm-hmm. You cannot pattern that structure with Chamorro speaking. Mm-hmm. And so that's a challenge. Or they would say, when do I say ni, na, or nu? You know, and I have to think. So I'd have to go down and say, I don't really know. Let me explain. Let's see. So we do an inventory and figure out how. So this textbook that we develop is really filling that. In fact, if you look at the appendices, it has all the rules, you know, the prepositions and all of that and how you use it.
That's what I need. Because yeah. I do get confused on the who and zu. Well,
yes.
Zu I know is me.
Yes. So take and use it.
One of the things I read about this book that was kind of interesting for me is that it was described as a hands-on book.
It is.
How is it so?
Because I tested it with that. It's a student can learn it, can take it, and self-study and learn. Because it integrated the structure of the language with the learning of the, you know, how to speak and speaking. Mm-hmm. And why it, so it is, it's like that. It's very learner, it's very good for learners. It's very learner oriented, yeah.
What other things does the textbook contain?
It also has with that, you know, the grammatical structure we explained and weaved in mm-hmm. as we teach the student how to learn some more. But we also have a big glossary. I did two glossaries. One of a glossary of English to Tomorrow, Tomorrow to English.
Okay.
That's the first one I think that ever has that. Because the students today need something. They know English, but they don't know tomorrow. So they have to start with English and find out what it means in tomorrow. Not the other way.
Mm-hmm. Where is the textbook currently being used, or where will it be used in the future, and what is the reaction of students when they take this class?
The students are actually very happy. I've already know that there are former students that have purchased it because they wanted to see, you know, a real textbook that they had learned from. It will be used, and we were using it at the University of Hawaii. Because the faculty that's doing that now is Brand Song Song. Brand was my student, and when I was retiring, then you had to, you know, kind of like train him, and he's wonderful. He's a great teacher. The students love him, mm-hmm. and so he's doing the teaching there. But you ask about
University of Hawaii.
University of Hawaii. You know, Guam and the University of Guam, I've been told they're using the textbook. I really don't know. There was a little issue with their orthography. When I finished the grant was written in when we had the orthography of Spoken Tomorrow, and we were doing it the way I had a committee called Mamfaji. I used to come here and Bishop Kamatsu and other, you know,
elders,
mm-hmm. And how the language should be spoken and how it should be used. Then at the end, Guam reinstated its orthography program.
Okay.
And there were some differences in my presentation of Tomorrow language mm-hmm. with theirs and how it should be written.
Mm-hmm. The official orthography, yes.
And I could not, you know, it's far too more important for me to do the Tomorrow, because that's how I learned it, mm-hmm. and that's how it was to me. I cannot see spelling Tomorrow differently than what it had been to me.
What you were taught.
What it was taught, and what mm-hmm. I learned, and what most of my family, friends, mm-hmm. and colleagues have used.
What do you think about that, you know, like, the differences in the official orthography from the CNMI and Guam, and then also, you know, the differences in the way things are pronounced mm-hmm. island to island. What are yes. your thoughts on that?
I don't see that there's a problem in how words are pronounced from island to island. I have lived a lot of my life here in the CNMI, Rota, and I have relatives that are from here and Guam. I don't see that as a big problem. But it's how they're writing it mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, one of the problems we have today, you know, language is dynamic. It changes as we yes. have accrued other knowledges. And translating Tomorrow becomes a real issue from English to Tomorrow, because there are many words that do not exist in our language. And some people would either what they call chamorize the word. Some people just create a word, and that's not right, you know, because language is something that evolved out of a society, out of a culture.
Okay.
not somebody's creation or invention or choice. And so I don't agree with having to change words by somebody. I think it should be something that comes out of the culture.
What would you do with words for new technology that hadn't been invented yet, like computer?
Well, I would use computer. It's understood by everyone. It's mm-hmm. clear. There's no confusion in what you hear and what you understand. Mm-hmm. But if you create something that is not, you know, it's a fuzzy kind of concept mm-hmm. that's not clear. So just like what happened when the Spaniards came here and they introduced bread, we call it pan. They introduced la masa, sidra, bintana. We used that. We didn't have those words in our days. We did not try to create a word for it. We just took that was introduced at that time. And the value of that is when you're studying language, you also see you can trace the history of evolution in the language mm-hmm. and the sources of that evolution by the kinds of words that are used. So we're now in the, you know, in the technology era where a lot of the words you cannot, you know, how would you say, font in tomorrow, you know? I mean, there's just some words that don't fit. And like I said, that's why we use pan, and we use la masa, and we use sidra, because those words were absent in our culture, or those concepts, those things. And so when it came in, we took them. Washing machine, you know, mm-hmm. and a lot of words. So words, culture is dynamic. It integrates those new experiences and new stuff as we discover them, as we learn to use them.
What do you hope this book will continue to do for Native Chamorros and also people interested in the Chamorro yeah. culture and language?
It will help them to learn. Mm-hmm. If they want to speak, it will help them to learn. It allows them to understand how the language should be spoken and how to express what they want to say in Chamorro. We are lucky. Chamorros, there are many native speakers still alive. When Hawaii came into the bilingual education, there is no native speaker in Hawaii. But what they did is they resurrect their language, and they had immersion schools. They, even now at the airport, you hear Hawaiian language. That's what they're doing. I'd hate to have us get to that point where there is no speaker before we begin to try to rediscover our language.
Mm-hmm. What do you feel, or do you feel there is anything, no, that's not the question I want to ask. What do you feel is unique about the Chamorro language? Like the feeling, the seasoning, mm-hmm. the heart of the Chamorro language.
Yes.
Do you, in your research, in your experience?
Oh, yes. Well, when they say how you speak Chamorro, you know, it's a lot of it is your, when you express yourself in expressive language, because you can say one thing and mean many things. The facial expression, the tone of voice, and all of those, it's an oral language. And much of it comes from that. And that's why the pronunciation is not a big issue for me. Mm-hmm. As long as it blends in and understand, you know. I have no trouble speaking to people from Luta, for example, even if they never left the island. I mean, I can understand it, mm-hmm. and they can understand me. So it's a beautiful language in that it allows you with that, you know. It's an expressive language, you know, like you say, half a day, you know, could be half a day, could be blessing, or half a day.
Or, oh, two different meanings.
Yes, exactly.
One is a greeting, and then one is kind of like, what's your problem? Or
yes, exactly. That's what Chamorro is. Yes.
Oh, that's a great example.
Yeah.
Well, we are chatting today with Dr. Faith Untalan. She is the author of the book Finotsumoro for Beginners, and we'll be back with more after this break.
Half a day, Zantiro. I'm Leo Pangilinan with the Northern Marianas Humanities Council. We'd like to take a moment to thank our generous sponsors who have made possible the many programs in our community like this show. We couldn't have done it without them. And if you value the work we do and would like to make a contribution to our efforts, we ask that you consider making an in-kind or cash contribution to the Northern Marianas Humanities Council. Any amount is appreciated, and donations of up to $5,000 qualify for an educational tax credit. We appreciate your partnership and support. Sizus Maasi, Olomai, and thank you.
Welcome back to Your Humanities Half Hour. Dr. Fay, thank you for sharing about the book. But as we said before, this was not your full-time job. You actually have degrees in social work, public health, and you had a very interesting study for your doctorate related to Chamorros who were migrating to California at the time. Why was this a topic of interest for you?
It was a topic of interest to me because I grew up in Guam, and Guam was a wonderful place for me to live. And I wondered why people are leaving, you know. And this, I started graduate school in 1965. It's a long time before you were born. And so I wanted to find out why and what was the purpose. There were very many. And then I found, so what the things I found out is the biggest group of Chamorros that left the island first was the military.
They went to join the military.
They joined the military. The U.S. government, you know, planted them in different parts of the country where the bases are. They brought their families, and they settled there. And to this day, that's what's happening. Very many of them, you can trace where the largest numbers are by merely finding out where the militaries are. Then I found the other things are like education, you know, like for me. And right now there is a lot of Chamorro students that graduated from UH that haven't gone home because there are no jobs for what they have learned, the technical fields they're in and so on. For example, Bran Songsong, he's a very bright boy from Luta, but he's in Hawaii because that's where he can develop his, you know, his skills and his talents for, you know, for his livelihood. So that's what they call the brain drain. And then the other thing are those people that are looking for jobs, you know, for that. So I thought there were three types at that time of migration, people leaving the island, the military, education, and then it's just to look for a job.
Especially I think it's the same today,
It's a little different today. And then there's Typhoon Karen, that many people, they were just so disappointed with what happened. So they uprooted. I have relatives that did that, uprooted, went to California. Many of them have come back, but not everybody was able to come back. There was a fruit company in California that was recruiting fruit pickers in Guam, and many of them went. They found out, they thought it was an attractive job, you know, out of the island, exciting life. They found out how horrible being a farm worker is. And many of them ran away, come back. Some of them came to me. I was in school then at that time at USC. Because they couldn't, you know, it's better back on the island, so they did that. So those are the first. Now you're asking me today, same today? Yes, a little bit of the same today, but many of today to illness. A lot of people are leaving the island because they don't have the adequacy of medical care. I see that in Hawaii, and I think that's true in probably other parts of the U.S.
So related to your field of study, what do you think policymakers, social policymakers need to be aware of in relation to this migration of islanders going to the U.S. mainland.
Yeah, the same thing you struggle with in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. They have to create jobs that keep up with, you know, the times for people. Because they don't have the kind of jobs they need on the island that will use their skills. They leave. Very many have, for the policy there in terms of, you know, we had this job where in Guam for a long time and probably other places, people get extra pay by working in Guam. But the Moors who come there, they don't. You know, there's a name for that. Where, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm.
When you have to travel overseas to work.
And they give you that, and they don't. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, our government on the island just hadn't been able to support that way of maintaining and storing our people on island. Even physicians, you know, they would come to Guam and then leave. Thank God more and more are coming. They're opening their own offices like Dr. Aldon here. But there's not the challenge for what their learning exceeds the opportunities that they can have on the island especially the young people that are coming up. We need to, in government, need to look at that. How can we better bring our people? Hawaii has the same thing.
Do you have any specific ideas?
Hawaiians, people from Hawaii leaving to go to Las Vegas, to other places, because cost of living and hardships, it's easier for them to move to another place. What also made me interested in that is that in 1980 was the first time the U.S. Census Bureau counted Pacific Islanders. First time Chamorros were counted. They called them Guamanian at the time. And that was a really very difficult thing for me because, you know, Guamanian is a resident of Guam, not a culture. And Chamorro embraces people from all the islands in the Marianas. If we're counting race, then that's the way it should be. But it took until 1980 when they realized that and then include, it's still there. They still have Chamorro and Guamanian to get in the line as if they were similar, you know, but it's still one of these days maybe that will wear out and people will know that Chamorro is what we're counting. So I was on the Census Advisory Committee from 1980 to 2020.
Wow.
It's when my last
40 years?
Yeah. For a decennial census, it's every 10 years.
Oh, okay.
I didn't work. I was on the advisory committee.
Dr. Fay, I want to thank you for sharing your knowledge with us and your experience and your insights. Mm. And thank you especially for this publication that's helping so many people. Do you have any final thoughts before
we go? I hope so. This book is only the beginning. As we learn better how to teach, it will improve. So this book is not perfect. It's not the end. It's the beginning to make it better so that Chamorros can learn their language with ease and, you know, and greater results with their education.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your time today and for sharing. Our guest today has been Dr. Fay Antalan. She's the author of the book Finotsumoro for Beginners. This has been your Humanities Half Hour. I'm Catherine Perry.
Your Humanities Half Hour has been made possible in part by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Democracy demands wisdom. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this program do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. For more information or to share your thoughts, contact the Northern Marianas Humanities Council at nmhcouncil.org or on social media at 670 Humanities. That's 670 Humanities.